Welcome, everyone, to the Your Energy First podcast. I'm your host, Emily Marie, and it is such a pleasure to have you here today to co-create with you in this space and to talk about all things your energy. Welcome, everybody, back to the podcast. I am so excited today and so honored to get to interview Sarah Hart. She is a ceremonialist, a ritualist, and a death doula. Sarah supports individuals and small groups in navigating expanded states of consciousness with the support of plant medicine allies. Her approach with clients is relational, intuitive, and earth honoring. Welcome.
Thank you, Emily. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Likewise. So Sarah, you and I met through the ethers years ago, a few years ago, and we connected, and I've had the honor of getting to work with you in various ways. And it was funny because whenever this was a couple weeks ago, you had popped into my mind to interview you for the podcast, because I know many people who have benefited from your offerings, and I know the work you do for yourself, which is very intentional with a lot of integrity, a lot of expansive ongoing learning. And I thought, oh, I would love to have you on the podcast. And then you had sent me an email about something, and I was like, why have I not had you on yet? So here we are.
Here we are. Thank you, Emily. Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Of course. So help me understand, help the people who are participating in this session understand how, like, if we were to say, so you're a ceremonialist, a ritualist, a death doula, how did you come to realize that these were the offerings that you wanted to support people with?
Yeah. Oh, Emily, that's
a loaded question.
Yeah, that takes us back about a decade, I would say. I was really on a different path in my life. And I would say a path of being kind of more conventional in my work, in my life. And I had a transformative life experience, the loss of my husband, which really catapulted. It was a sudden death, but it really catapulted my inner exploration of life, the preciousness of my life, and what I wanted to do with it and who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so that experience unfolded over a number of years of really deep self-discovery, guided by ultimately my intuition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of learning along the way. So the death doula aspect of it, I think, is relevant to the actual physical death that we will all encounter at some point in our life, mm-hmm. but also encapsulates the many little deaths that we encounter throughout our lives. Deaths of the different aspects of ourselves that are no longer serving us, deaths of relationships, friendships, jobs, animals, pets, homes, numerous deaths. So, that's kind of how I got started. Was death was the catalyst to really bringing me back home to myself more fully, is a continued path, and then also inspired a lot more intentionality and connection to energy and the other than human realms.
There's so many great things you said there. A few items that stood out to me. One is that you mentioned that you've been on this exploration a decade. I found we can be so hard on ourselves to like hurry through the process. And it's so ongoing. So yeah. ongoing. The other thing that you had mentioned is your husband at the time, his death catapulted this inner exploration. Many people have a similar experience where something triggers, there's some sort of a trigger in the scheme of things. And then you also mentioned the preciousness of life. Can you elaborate what the preciousness of life means to you?
Well, something that welled up in me in that experience of having that catalyst was kind of coming to a crossroads. And that crossroads, of course, it's not binary, but it was really kind of like an aspect of my inner light speaking to me and saying, you've got two choices here. Mm-hmm. One choice, this particular catalyst could completely undo you in such a way and overwhelm you with grief in such a way that you wouldn't want to be here anymore. And it's really important that you honor and acknowledge that that is one path that some people take and that that is how painful that is. Mm-hmm. And if you took that path, that pain would affect your daughter, mm-hmm. would affect your family, would affect your friends. Mm-hmm. And this voice said, you're not going to choose that path, but you have to understand that some people may choose that path. So no judgment.
Yeah.
And it showed me kind of over here is another path. And this is the path that you're going to take. And all of your life experiences and all of the adversity that you have metabolized and grown from, you're going to cultivate that. And through this, you're going to become your full self. You have an opportunity in this lifetime to become the magnitude of who you really are. And then support and empower others in doing the same. And that's your life's work. And death is a part of this. So I got this
wow
download and I was like, that's a lot. No pressure. It was literally within hours of getting the news that he had passed.
Wow. And
it sparked something inside of me and really was one of my, I would say, biggest awakenings. And then the other added layer to that was this sense of honoring this person that was really important to me. And like, what would be the way to honor his life? It would be to like fully inhabit my own. And that really sparked for me this sense of like how wildly precious it is to get to be here and get to be in a body. Mm-hmm. And felt really, and then I was getting this experience at such a young age. I was in my, you know, mid to late 20s. And I thought, you've got the rest of your life ahead of you. Let's really do something with this life that's meaningful.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
One thing that sticks out. So you hear about his passing. Not even a full day has passed. What state were you in? Where do you remember where you were sitting? Yeah. What had you done something? Had you said a prayer? Had you, you know, grabbed a bottle of wine? Like, I don't know, right? I didn't know you at that time, but like, what did you do that brought you to that state where you received such clarity?
Yeah. Well, I had at the time a 3.5-year-old in the home that, you know, was watching cartoons and didn't know what was going on. And so I needed some space to respond and react however that was going to show up without frightening her. So I just set her up inside, shut the door. I went out and I stood in my backyard and I put my bare feet on the earth And I remember looking up at the sky, and it was a beautiful July day, and the sun was shining, and the sky was that like really crisp blue. And I thought to myself, what a beautiful day to die. And it was in that moment and in that thought and in that connection with my heart, connection with the earth beneath me, that my heart just broke open. I just let my heart break open to the beauty and the pain at the same time. And it was in that moment, a surrender and a complete acceptance that this is the shape my life is taking.
Thank you for sharing such a tender experience and moment in your life. And it's my experience that a lot of people have these moments in one shape or the other, either outside or in their bathroom or in the car. And I'm really glad that we're talking about it here.
Yeah.
Because these are very normal thoughts for people to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there are rites of passage and thresholds that people cross, and they have to do it alone because we don't have the ritual or the community set up to hold people through these processes. Like in modernity, we're just, we become orphaned from these older ways that our great, 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 great grandmothers, we would have been really deeply and well held through these transformative experiences.
Right. Did you say modernity? Was that the term you used?
Yeah.
Can you help me understand what that means?
Yeah, I think of it as just being more modern humans, where before we used to live more outside. We used to be more interconnected with the natural world and the other than human world because in part our survival depended on it. But also there was a lot more ceremony, ritual, earth honoring practices across all cultures. And so in modernity, as modern humans, we're mostly inside, and we have lost touch with some of those art forms.
What became some of your most, the term that's coming to me is cataclysmic, art forms that supported you early on?
Art would have been the first one, was creation. So because my path completely changed, I started to focus on what I really wanted to be putting my energy and time into. And so I began painting. And then I worked for a number of years as an artist, and I found that, like many creators, you know, musicians or writers or poets or dancers, all the different forms of creation really allows an access point to flow states or deeper embodiment. And so art was my access to these flow states, to deeper embodiment. And it also allowed me to kind of process the grief through my body and heart while my mind was kind of distracted with something else.
Okay. You have mentioned embodiment a few times, and it was coming through for our conversation. What does embodiment feel like for you? Or what is it for you?
So embodiment for me is feeling my, sometimes in the busyness of the day, or like when I was running around packing lunches or something, or just doing tasks or being busy, it can feel like my awareness kind of comes up and slightly out of the body, kind of around the head or from the shoulders up. And with embodiment practices, which there are numerous different ones, feels like it takes all of that energy and brings it all the way down through the body, all the way down to the bottom of my feet. And it feels like I am inhabiting more of myself. And I have access to more of myself.
Do you ever worry something might stay stuck when you embody it? Like a feeling or a...
Yeah, I think that is like totally a very universal, normal human thing. Still happens, absolutely, when we come into contact with emotions or feelings or sensations that we want to push away or avoid. Totally, there can be a fear of that's all that there is. And I find sometimes that's what those emotions, because they can be so all-consuming, it can be kind of the belief that that's all there is.
Right.
But really in creating the conditions or getting the support to be able to be with discomfort or to be with some of those hard emotions, what happens is everything transforms into love.
Yeah. So you have your embodiment practices, and you now today have this awareness of, I'll call it a need for a stronger community, stronger communities, plural. I would say more conscious for just intentional communities. So when you were in that phase of your life, how did you navigate finding the right people, not the right people, but the people to support what you were going through?
That's a really good question. I think in part, Emily, it was a really humbling experience in that I tended to be a caretaker in my community of really offering myself, but had a much harder time receiving. And then I was faced with an experience where that was another layer in that kind of download for my higher self was like very clearly said to me, you need to start saying no, and you need to ask for help. And I was just like, not in my vocabulary.
Speaking of an emotion being stuck.
Yeah.
And that's so, what a lot of people feel.
Totally. And so yeah. I had no choice, but that was something that was like really beautiful about this energy that was like coming in, was a boundary. I was feeling a sense of I had to enforce boundaries with my time and my energy, because I did not have the energy to offer in the way that I had before. That energy really had to be turned back in on myself and for myself. And of course, I had I was overwhelmed by the support that showed up. I mean, it's no joke that there were at least 100 people that were showing up from many different facets of my life, but also my late husband's life, coming into support. So there was support in kind of the physical, tangible realm that I began to say yes to, even though it was really stretching me. But I also sought out support. So I sought out support from healers and people like you to help hold this bigger spiritual process that was unfolding that I didn't quite have the languaging for or fully know what was happening. And then after about a year or so, I started to make my way into healing arts communities, and that started opening doors for different modalities, one of them being working with plant medicines. And that particular avenue was one that was another catalyst for my healing. And coming more home to myself.
What is plant medicine?
Yeah, so plant medicine could mean a lot of different things. Plant medicine could be, it could be peppermint tea. It could be like herbalism or medicinal uses. But plant medicine could also be working with what sometimes are called like master plant teachers. And that's the spirit of the medicine that you would be working with and relating to them as if they are another being. So cannabis is wildly, you know, used in our culture and exploited and consumed, and in many different ways. And it's also used for medicine. But one of the ways that I think people have forgotten about is that she also is a teacher and a healer and a guide, and embodies deep feminine wisdom. She's a plant that's been here for a long time on this planet. And then there are other plant medicines that people hear about and talk about from South America, ayahuasca, and then from the fungi kingdom, mushrooms is another one. And there are numerous others, but these are three that I think most people in the US know what you're talking about when you talk about those three.
Is it called a journey with plant medicine? Okay.
Journey.
What else would someone call it?
Ceremony.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does one begin to approach having a new relationship, a more aware relationship with plant spirit and therefore their plant medicine?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. And that's something I really love like assisting people in orienting towards. So, I think the first thing is to kind of unpack, sort of our own hierarchy of like humans being at the top and being kind of the pinnacle of intelligence. And if that's something that we haven't done, because orienting towards plant medicine or working with plant spirits, it's all about relationship. So just like we are coming into relationship with humans where we might sit down and have tea and get to know one another and ask questions and kind of share a back and forth, it's a similar approach, that very start of a relationship with a plant spirit of maybe you start to feel that plant spirit or sense that plant spirit come into your field or into your awareness, however you perceive that. And it might bubble up for you as curiosity and wonder. And from that place, you know, people can be really empowered to start a conversation with a plant spirit before you even imbibe them or work with them. You can be in relationship with them.
I love that.
Yeah.
So say someone is now aware that they can have this, to me, incredible, at any stage, an incredible relationship with plant spirit. And maybe someone starts with their simple evening peppermint tea or chamomile, or maybe it's expired because they haven't finished it because they don't drink it that often, but they listen to this podcast and think, oh, okay, here's an option. Mm-hmm. So they go, they have their cup of tea, and they start to, and I want to differentiate to something that you said is noticing a plant spirit coming to you, because versus we take the tea and we're, or we go to a ceremony with someone like yourself, and those are us consciously going to actually have an experience, creating the experience. And you mentioned humans realizing we're not at the top. And so this is one of the things that, as a society, I'm so excited for people to realize the power from a love, power in the love. When I say power, I mean the power of the oneness and the love. And that because we get to be supported in so many ways, we get to have an experience where plant medicine does find us, plant spirit does find us. So there's consciously choosing to create an experience with plant spirit, which would be, for example, a cup of tea or maybe cacao. And then there's the plant spirit medicine, plant spirit coming to you. Do you mind talking about the two a little bit, starting with those who are consciously creating with any of what you talked about before, any of those different, from the kingdoms to the...
Yeah. So there, I think that, and part of what I'm sharing is something that I have heard from so many people that, you know, over the years, is that they started to dream about a plant spirit, or a plant spirit started showing up in their meditations or in their thoughts or, you know, in their intuition. And it could have been a period of weeks, months, or years before they actually engaged in that relationship more deeply. So the one thing I would like to say is that plant spirits are incredibly patient, incredibly gracious, no pressure, so non-intrusive. They all have different, you know, personalities and different, you know, flavors. And what's so neat is that they really meet us where we're at. And they want to be in relationship with us. They really want to be in relationship with us. And they have co-evolved alongside of humanity for thousands of years. So our way, 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 way back ancestors have experiences or had rituals, no matter where you come from. There isn't a continent on the earth that doesn't have plant medicine spirits that can be used for expanding your consciousness. So that being said, I think that it taps into something primordial within us, that we carry this knowing of how to be in relationship as human beings with the other than human realm. And in particular, we're talking about plant spirits. So they might show up for you in many different ways, however that shows up. Beautiful. And because it's a two-way relationship, you really get to decide how you want to engage, if you want to engage, and what that might look like for you. I think in particular, if somebody who's listening has a relationship with cannabis and maybe they've been using it recreationally, no judgment. I've had that history too, you know, But an offering could be maybe take a little bit of that plant flower and put it on your altar, or create an altar or a space that is sacred in your home, and drop into your inner light, into your inner knowing, and start being in communication with it. And not from a place of like putting it on a pedestal or praising it or turning them into a guru or anything like that. It is parallel. The two of you are, you know.
Totally get that.
Yeah. So I think that can be kind of like a first step, is if you don't have the material of the plant, engaging in spirit meditation, dream writing, art even, or if you actually do have a plant material, something like cannabis, of having that conversation. And then when you do engage, asking her, when's a good time? How would you set up your space? So creating sacred space, whatever that means to you. And then your undivided presence and attention, and engaging thoughtfully and with your whole heart. The gift for you to unwrap is how that unfolds when we approach plants in that way.
This sounds so exciting and invigorating and opens up such a world of possibilities for those of us who have not been consciously led into this world.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Let's talk about that for a minute. So someone once told me society is our greatest oppressor. And I said, I'm going to use that because that sums it up.
Yeah.
So if we think about the ways we currently utilize alcohol, spirit, cannabis, now psychedelics, the fungi kingdom. I love calling it I love the kingdom of fungi. I don't know why, that just sounds so fun. It makes me think of like Super Mario Brothers or something.
Yeah, it does.
So we're coming from this place as a society, we're overstressed, we're under self satiated. You had mentioned when you were at that turning point in your life and having to receive from 100 plus people and going within. And that's one of the wildest things about this journey, is navigating the within and actually tending to the within, because society puts, I'm going to say, women as a whole on a pedestal on how much can you give.
Yeah.
So now we're in this place where people are leaning on these things to help support the stress, the trauma that they're going through. So for someone who says, you know, I've been using, name one of these things, recreationally to help soothe anxiety, to help calm my ADHD, whatever it is that they're using it for, how does one navigate the what do I call it? Navigate utilizing something that way and bridging this gap.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm talking about this from a mental level. You've given us such a beautiful approach from a spiritual, emotional, energetic connection level. How do we mentally begin to approach, you know, I'm thinking of a working mom with young kids who says, you know what, I'm going to take these chocolate edibles, or I'm going to, you know, be it mushrooms or be it cannabis or whatever. And she's relying on it in that way. How does she begin to bridge and nurture this relationship overall?
Yeah, that's a great, that's a great question. So I think, well, I think one of the things that that comes to mind or comes to heart is that there's like such a spectrum of how you might engage any of these allies, kind of like what you're saying for managing stress or ADHD from like a brain food or brain fuel kind of a way to maybe a slightly higher dose to feel or experience a little bit more of your own heart to like even further down the spectrum. So I would invite people to think of how you engage or how you might engage these different allies is a spectrum, meeting it where you're at. But if you were to choose to work with these medicines in a deeper way, it's not saying there's anything less at the lighter end of the spectrum, but when I say deeper way, you're generally working with higher doses of these medicines because you have to penetrate the defense mechanisms of our personality and our psyche, if we want to get to the root layer of the more primary emotions and suffering that is holding us back, keeping us in pain, keeping us from our true nature. And that particular engagement does require courage, trust, relationship. You're building a relationship with the medicines, and also they're helping you actually build a relationship, deeper relationship with yourself.
That makes so much sense. So much sense. So, say someone is feeling called to plant journey. What would you recommend that they look for in someone to have that, hold that ceremony, that ritual for them? What would a practitioner, what would you recommend it, what practitioner qualities to hold?
So in the Renaissance, I can just share that my own, I would say, lineage or kind of tradition that and path that I've been on has came before this sort of psychedelic Renaissance and was steeped in this underground network of guides who had been doing this since the 70s. So the psychedelic Renaissance then, or 60s really, never went away. It just, because you know how you had said society is our biggest oppressor, it just pushed everything underground. And so there have been guides and elders on this path that have been cultivating wisdom for generations. And those were fortunate to have some of them be my teachers and were the teachers of other teachers that I had. And so with the psychedelic Renaissance, we have a lot of options. And I think it's really important to consider when you're looking for a guide, when you're looking for a practitioner, what is the basis of their practice? How did they get here? How long have they been doing this? How many journeys have they had? Who were their teachers? So much is available, online in a year program here or this there. And what I would say is that it's many, many people that are coming out into this field right now. My concern is it's not sufficient that your direct experience over a period of years at many different doses with many different medicines really help cultivate your relationship to these medicines to support and be a bridge for other people's experiences. So experience. I would really want to know how much experience they have. I would really want to know what their relationship to spirit is.
Mm-hmm.
What are their practices in energy healing or spirit work? What's their relationship like to the earth? Like, how do they relate to the earth?
Mm-hmm.
A therapeutic background is wonderful, and can be really supportive, and those tools can be really wonderful. But really, I'm kind of leaning more into the more earth-honoring animist approach of like really cultivating those aspects of yourself as a practitioner. And that being a really large and important part of being in ceremony, with these medicines.
Which ceremonies have you been called to facilitate with people?
Yeah, so what I can say is that I have worked with individuals and couples in small, intimate groups across all walks of life, and with a variety of plant spirit allies, and allies that are not in plant form.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. Yeah. We got to cover the legal aspect of it all. Okay. So, and you do this in person and some virtual.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So with virtual, my offering there is totally above board with cannabis. And it's because it's held in a group setting where people don't know one another and people can be as anonymous as they'd like to be. It's kind of an introduction into working with a plant spirit that is very potent. Can be a wild card, but is held in kind of a group sphere from a intentional place. Kind of can create the like safety or conditions to let go and surrender a little bit more deeply and getting to know yourself in relationship to what this medicine might offer you.
So if someone shows up to say that online virtual ceremony, are they required to ingest the cannabis?
No. Yeah, absolutely. No, always. Yeah. Always consent based. Always consent based. Yeah.
I'm reflecting upon my own personal experience in my life, and I never enjoyed the experience of cannabis, fungi at a light level, by the way, tobacco, none of it. And to me now it makes so much sense why that would be the case, because I wasn't partaking in a way that was supportive to the experience between myself and the plant spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what you're saying, Emily, right there is this like term that's coined in the psychedelic realm of set and setting.
Okay.
So set and setting being like, you know, where are you when you're imbibing? Is it with like a group of friends, or is it, you know, an intentional ceremony, or Are you being held by a guide? You know, is it in the back alley of a bar, or is it a curated space that tells your being something different is happening here?
Oof, I love that.
Yeah, we're stepping into liminal space.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, so, you know, like that again, that kind of goes back to the spectrum of like how we engage the set and setting, who we're with. And then also sometimes like what can really open up when there's a person there holding space for us, keeping us safe. It allows for that like deeper spectrum of the medicine to come through. So I can say in my own personal experience and working with cannabis, when it's been more recreational, it's could be fun, could be giggly, could have euphoric feelings in the body. But I find it gets in the way of like communication, and it is limiting to actually what wants to come through or what could be possible with that medicine. And she can be used in one of the modalities I'm trained in with that particular medicine to heal deep trauma. And it's uncomfortable that particular avenue and that process is not necessarily for everyone, not the path for everyone, but she does have the capacity to actually really heal the nervous system and the body.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then on the other end of the spectrum, it can also be really healing to experience the expansion of your awareness to include everything. She also, other cultures have engaged with her through like movement and yoga, in ceremony, but she also has the capacity to help thin the veils. And sometimes put our thinking mind away for a little bit so that we can more clearly communicate with the deeper aspects of ourself, but also other beings.
Other beings. Let's first touch on, so someone can enjoy an experience with you virtually, in person, in group, or one-on-one. How does someone know that these offerings that you have, I'm going to say you, and when I say you, I'm also referring to other practitioners that have similar core beliefs and values as you do. When we talked about the type of practitioner to look for, which is exactly what I look for in a practitioner, is how has this been an active part of their life versus something that they learned and are now turning around and teaching. So how does someone know, you know, we mentioned that they might feel a call of the plant, but let's say there's just a curiosity or they're experiencing emotions. What emotions, what might someone be experiencing to where they could say, this could potentially be a very supportive experience for me? Does that make sense?
Yeah. The first thing that comes up is like a curiosity. If they're feeling a curiosity, like, I wonder. And then the second thing would be, you know, you offer a lot of, in some of your earlier podcasts around helping people really get into their inner light and that deeper listening. I would encourage people to make contact with that deeper listening and like really ask and listen in, and maybe ask more than one time, you know, like, and ask questions like, is this the right facilitator? Is this the right medicine? Is this the right time in my life? Do I have the resources and support I need to embark on this? And I think it's really important not to go running towards this work from a place of desperation or urgency, because it's not a quick fix. It's not a cure-all. It will require your active participation. And I often tell people that if you actually knew what would be required of you in the healing process of working with plant medicines, you would slow down. Really slow down.
Why slow down?
Because it's going to stir and shake things up that neither you, I, or somebody else is working with you is going to be able to predict.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's part of the healing process. But really entering in from that like earnest, deep knowing, mm-hmm. a place of your own integrity. Why am I doing this? What am I asking for of this medicine? What am I wanting to heal, learn, navigate? So, yeah, asking questions.
So the healing process starts in that moment, is what
absolutely.
I'm hearing.
Yes, the journey begins before.
So you've mentioned your intuition a couple of times. What is your intuition to you?
Well, I keep getting to know my intuition. So it's an ongoing relationship that I'm continually surprised and delighted by. But I would say for me, my intuition is it's like the most natural voice inside of myself that guides me towards aligning with my highest and best, and is always aiming for the path that is most aligned with me at the right time that it's most aligned with me.
When we talk about alignment, it sounds really nice. What has alignment meant to you?
Well, Emily, just reflecting on, I've known you for a few years, but I've like really gone in more of a deep dive with you, I would say, in the last year. Mm-hmm. And hands down, life-changing. And so, you know, alignment for me, and I know a lot of your listeners who are familiar with your work, has meant, it has always been for my best, but it hasn't always been comfortable, and it has often been hard, and it has also pushed me to the edges of my capacity, the edges of my comfort zone. As I'm like on this path of continuing to align with myself, something that came out of my work with you when I was doing, I believe, the alignment container, actually, was, I think we had our second or third session, and I was like, well, Emily, my entire identity has shifted. Did not see this coming, discovered I was queer. And so ultimately alignment has meant for me, deeper and deeper levels of like my own liberation,
mm-hmm.
which is a continued lifelong process.
And such brave heart work.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. One of the things that is coming to me right now is how profoundly love found you, love met you. And love comes with its own beautiful guided lessons. So, part of the journey of holding space for yourself, you've mentioned holding space for people in ceremony and in rituals. How is it for you? And I use this term holding space, I would love to hear sort of your definition of it and what it means for you. But how have you seen parallels in your work with your own personal journey and then how it is you hold space? I'm going to take a step back. How do you hold space for the people you're supporting? We can call them clients, but it's such a heart, like it's so heart and it feels like such a co-creation. It feels almost funny to say client sometimes, but you get the idea.
Absolutely. Well, I think it comes from this like fundamental knowing feels like there I align with this place inside of myself that when I am gazing or interacting with the person in front of me, it's like I am holding them, it's like I'm getting a glimpse of their true nature. And then my work of holding space is like, how do I be in such a way that they can remember who they are?
Have chills.
And I love humans.
Yeah.
And I feel one of the parallels in my own life is like now getting to give back in a way of holding space, particularly for women who are coming into their own kind of like healing gifts and healing capacity and witnessing their unfolding is, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary when we're doing it for ourselves. So cool. But it's so completely different when you're getting this like range of diversity of like, that's not my skill set. That's not my walk. But like celebrating how cool that I get to witness this come forward in you.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I agree. It's nice to. I can see now, it's so funny, the reflection of they're getting into their own version of alignment, to use
Yeah.
just a very general term. And the fact that it is, we talk about that societal oppressor, and it's breaking away from that and it's creating something new. And
Yeah.
it's so incredible to get to do that for yourself and then get to help others create that space for themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
So, what's the difference for you between holding space for an individual versus a group? What's that experience like for you?
Yeah, so well, for an individual, they are two totally different, as you know, like they're two totally different containers. So for an individual, all my energy and focus is on that person. And also I'm holding and taking in, I'm kind of asking my energy to like step back and create the container and invite the energy that's there on behalf of them to support them. Sometimes that might be inviting their spiritual allies. And I'm doing this, quietly on the inside. Their luminous, wise, and well ancestors and helping spirits.
Gives me so many chills. I love it. Woo.
Yeah. So I love like creating this space to kind of invite that energy in and then, I'm not doing anything. I'm just kind of following the flow of energy and supporting what's happening. And then when it's with a group, generally I'm kind of setting an intention or there's a theme or a focus that I'm holding for the group and I'm not so much focusing on the individual. And holding that space, I would say, is wild in that the way that what people bring with them in the realm of like their own inner healing capacity and the way that they navigate their inner realm amongst other human beings, it's like they turn on lights for each other and they're all kind of helping each other show the way just by being willing to be vulnerable and being willing to be expressive, authentic, quiet if they need to be quiet. There is something even deeper that is available to us when we come together as a group that isn't possible when it's just one-on-one. I think it taps into a much older knowing that the way that we have come together to heal is in community. And it is excellent at healing. One of the most uncomfortable emotions of all is shame. It's not an emotion that many of us would raise our hands and say, yes, I would love to go heal and metabolize shame in a group. But I think because it's a social emotion, it really is one of the best ways when it's the right group, the right container, you're safe, it's the right time for you, that you can collectively heal these layers that are universal, that we all experience. And then because we all are interconnected, somebody might be healing and processing an emotion over here, not just for themselves, but on behalf of the collective. And then somebody else will take a turn over here. And so it's our pain is shared. Our joy is also shared.
You mentioned the collective and collective healing. What does that look like for you when you're with a client, when it's, and I suppose, is it, how do I frame this question? Because I'm looking at the energy right now. It can be very intertwined, but let's take a look at deep inner personal pain, personal experience, and let's actually take a moment to try to separate it from something that's going on in the collective or collective pain, which it's all interconnected. But how do you experience that versus someone's internal personal pain, especially in a group setting?
Mm-hmm. So it's all happening simultaneously. And so I think that sometimes the person who is experiencing it in that moment may feel that it's very personal. And they may not be aware of the ripple that's happening in the field on the collective. I think in some ways, what I'm describing is as I worked with medicines, like the more and more and more group experiences I had, the more I got to kind of see what was actually happening in the field. And then holding space for group experiences, like I would just witness this dance happen and the energy being like, moved and how important and necessary every single person's presence is in that space.
Totally.
But then on the individual, I think this is something that when people, and this is a generalization, but I would say for many people who are new to this work, most people feel more comfortable starting out at one-on-ones and kind of working up to being in a group setting, but they might experience a lot of the pain or suffering that is coming through or that they're encountering as it being very personal. But the more that they continue down the path of healing, what I see like 95% of the time is they start to get connected to even their ancestors. Mm-hmm. And we know that many of our recent dead, for most people, were not in contact with their inner light always, or had a lot of pain that they've been carrying from the oppression of society and ancestral trauma, that then when they start to open up to like, oh, okay, a drop of this is personal, but there's also this other pain I'm holding unconsciously, that are burdens that have come before me that are showing up because of the DNA in this body, you know, continuing forward. So I also see a lot of ancestral healing happen in this process, which doesn't need to be done in medicine states. It can be done, it can be done without the assistance of that support.
One of the things that keeps coming to mind is I'm putting myself in that group setting. And there's this moment where you're making this decision, do I go all in? Do I just dip my toe in? Do I lean back and do I just keep it surface level? I'm thinking for me as someone who's sitting in this group as an active participant. And that moment where we decide to be vulnerable because it does feel so personal is a mess. And the shame precedes the vulnerability. And there's no clear, concise, buttoned up, I would say societal expective way on how to move through it. You just do.
Mm-hmm.
You just do.
Yeah.
And I have many times, and I'm sure in many ways will continue to be that person where I was like, oh, this feels like it's just me, or this feels personal. And then later I realize, oh gosh, this is collective in so many ways. Or so anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, well, something that you are bringing up, Emily, is I think that is so universal as far as like, anytime I've had a client that is wanted to engage in group work, or, you know, thought about it, like a fear of like coming undone and getting messy in front of others does not sound like a good time.
Totally.
And not changing that in any way or making that go away. But like, you know, really what we're saying is we're creating the conditions for all of us to come and all of us to show up, and that would be a part of the process. And something that surprises people is that in working with plant medicines, they kind of build up your inner light in such a way that your inner light becomes this container where it softens the defenses, even how we might normally move our body, how we might speak, how we might, it actually brings us into more authenticity. And so, and then people, they perceive it differently, but oftentimes people will have this kind of moment of like, oh, I feel like, some energy is moving through me and I'm feeling nauseous, but I'm also feeling self-conscious. And I'm kind of like in this place of like trying to control or stop that from happening. The medicine has the capacity to give us this grace that actually coming undone, being messy, is getting well.
Wow.
And so that does something to us of like reminding us like, oh, we're all human.
Mm-hmm.
We're all human here. There's nothing wrong or bad or shameful about what I'm experiencing or what I'm feeling. And that gives us kind of the permission. So then we have that direct experience of like, oh, Yeah, I'm a messy, snotty human. This is not my headshot look, but like, and it's okay. And I feel like that's like a gift of greater self-acceptance and non-judgment towards ourself and compassion. It like teaches us self-compassion. And then because everybody else's hearts are tender and wide open, they're extending this compassion for you. Because how can you not have your heart be broken open to somebody who is being their most authentic and vulnerable self,
Of course.
including the messiness? To me, I'm like, calm, but I'm like,
100%,
so
100%.
happy for you. Yeah,
Totally,
you got
totally.
this. Yeah.
Do people become addicted to this and come back and wanna?
Well,
I should be careful with my words because I didn't mean actual addiction
sure.
to the plant or other.
I would say, what I think, like, kind of a concern, or something that I've seen, in medicine communities, and in particular ayahuasca. That's not a medicine I serve. It's a medicine I've spent a lot of time working with, but it's not my medicine in that way. But particularly with that medicine, something that I saw a lot in communities is people continuing to go back and go back and go back, with a high frequency and not leaving enough time to actually integrate the lessons because they're chasing euphoric states.
Have you ever witnessed someone who has a regular self practice, their version of meditation, their version of energy support, seek those, go back to plant medicine continuously?
No. I would say that I could give an example. Say a client comes to you and they don't have a self practice. My intention in working with them is meeting them where they're at and then supporting them at discovering what those self practices are. Because when you are engaging these medicines and when you're doing this kind of work, you have to have a practice. At some point, you have to have a practice if you want to continue to move forward. And the other thing is that I think it's a form of respect for the medicines that you're working with, that you're not handing your agency over to them or asking them to do something for you, because that's where really hard lessons, those medicines will give you really hard lessons, and set you straight. But it's that you are an active participant, and you are showing up and you are meeting that medicine halfway by doing your part. And I think we all know what our part is. And sometimes, does it have to be perfect? Does it have to be? I'm not an extremely regimented person, but I am like, but I do have practices that I engage, and you will get more out of the healing experience by cultivating your soil and having practices that you can lean into before your medicine experience, that you can also use in your medicine experience, and that you will definitely want and need after your medicine experience.
I think this is how there's no longer the way that the energies feel for me, I would say globally at a global conscious level, is that what you just shared no longer can be like diluted or avoided.
Yes.
I've been personally called to deepen my own practice, even in I would say almost extreme ways. I mean, very simple ways, but just clearing out a lot of the noise, the clutter, and really like going even deeper. You know, for me, deeper means expansion.
Yeah.
And having your own personal practice, it actually, how do I say this? I want to say it isn't easy. When we think again about our dear society, I say it that way. There's far more difficult things in life than meditating or praying or having an energy practice. I get that. But developing it is such a journey in and of itself. So what is your, not the exact detail, but do you mind sharing what has felt really supportive and been good for you around self-care and self-development practices?
Yeah. Well, something really simple that has shown up in the last week, actually, is going down to the water in the creek and putting my feet in the water. So for me, connecting with the elements of nature, that could be on walks or different things, but I'm not at the level of cold plunge, nor do I have a desire to do that by any means.
Right, right.
But there is something about being in relationship with water and the senses of the body, how cold it is. It brings all of my energy instantly down into my feet and is ground. So it's very, very grounding. And sometimes I'm singing down there to the water. So there's like an expression. So that feels playful. So I like practices that allow me to bring my full self and be creative and intuitive about how I might engage it. I have other practices, writing practices, meditation practices, dance practices. For me, deep listening practices and being in communication with my spirit team, my ancestors, the spirit medicine, plant medicine that I work with. I love all of our embodied human and animal friends, but I also really love being in relationship with spirit. And so that also informs my practices as well. I would call it like not religious, but my own form of like prayer.
Of course.
Yeah. And then art and creation, I feel are really embodying too.
Yeah. Human embodiment, energetic beingness, experiencing your ancestors, your spirit team, the energies, the guides are saying the energies of the wild. How has that, what's the question? I know what the question is. I'm like, how do I frame this question? Because when you have a self practice, you know what's yours. And you've mentioned a couple of times other beings who come in to support sessions. So how have you personally found the two to be distinctive?
Yeah.
What's your language around that?
Yeah. I've never had anybody ask me this before, Emily. So this is my first time I think putting it into words.
Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. I can give an example of a gentleman that I was working with who comes from a completely different continent and culture. And part of the intention for him coming in was connecting with ancestral wisdom, reconnecting with ancestral wisdom, because there was a lot of trauma that he had experienced, and he wanted to make contact with something deeper in a really rich and authentic way. And something that I experienced and how to like differentiate is, it's almost like the relationship with my own ancestors are kind of an intermediary of like, this is the signature of Sarah, that she's not, you know, here to do anything to your this person, but creating a welcoming environment for you to come in. So I might say a prayer or make an offering to them before that person shows up, just to say what we're doing here, and that, you know, they're welcome to be here for them, on behalf of them. And then when they're in the experience and they show up, even before they say something like, oh, hey, my ancestors are here, the quality of the air changes, the atmosphere changes, almost like hard to put a word to, but almost electric in a way. And I'll have this like sense or knowing of this deep ancient wisdom that is very different than my own lineage ancestry showing up on behalf of this person. And sometimes I'll be aware of like music or song or like the celebratory nature that they might bring. And they kind of huddle around this person like a cocoon of love. And then I'm like, awesome. I just get to witness spirit. Like they are experts at this.
Totally.
And that is like awe. Like I have to keep my jaw shut, you know. 100%. But the feeling is just like, this is amazing. This is just wow. So and then sometimes it's animals. Had somebody where a bird was working with them in the session. And then, because a bird was a little bit more palpable, and then towards the end of the session, they kind of shape-shifted and revealed they were actually more of a guide. And so,
of course,
I mean, you can't make this stuff up, you can't predict it, but it's
that's the truth.
It is like magic is the word that's coming to mind, but so awe-inspiring and beautiful. It feels like, I'm my work is to like midwife and steward sacred space so that spirit and this person's higher self and their inner knowing and inner healing can just all coalesce.
Yeah.
Everyone knows how to heal.
You have mentioned we talked about the embodiment, the humanness, and the spiritualness. To you, how do I frame this question? How do you talk about this? Because both are so beautiful, and both we know are so equal in their own unique, beautiful way. What's important to you about being human, and what's important to you about being spiritual?
Well, I think what's important to me about being human is reminding myself not to take things too seriously on the path of, and not to put pressure or expectations on myself, or pressure or expectations around healing timeline or what it should look like, or how it should look, because it's just going to take the time that it's going to take. So as a human, I'm continually learning to be more patient and to let go of control and to go with the flow more, and to be easier on myself, kinder, easier, gentler, to like let it be okay to take breaks from, you know, the work. And from the spiritual aspect of myself and my practices, it's the most important thing to me. I can't imagine being this human without it.
Why?
It really feels indistinguishable from who I am and is my life purpose and is my life path and why I'm here and gives my life meaning. And it's also where a lot of my like access to support beyond myself, that it doesn't all come down to just me, that there is this exquisite web of unseen support that is unwavering. If I can continue to lean into it.
I wish I could gold what you just said there. Do you mind expanding on how you came to that realization?
Well, I think that when I was going through really hard moments in my life, I also lost my mother unexpectedly when I was 17. And I think that was a pivotal moment for me in realizing or knowing that life continues beyond death. Consciousness continues beyond death. And I was having undeniable experiences and encounters with her in spirit of working things out that we weren't able to work out because of the premature, because of her leaving prematurely, but also at the perfect time that she needed to. And then that web started to, I think she really actually supported me in becoming more aware of the beings on my team, the guides, of like, hey, there's actually a lot more here for you in support of you if you want to engage it. And so just like slowly over time, I began leaning, discovering them.
I feel as though we've walked through a forest that doesn't have a path. And there's so many paths we could go down. I have so many more questions. You share so many gems of wisdom. And I'd love to invite you back to take it deeper.
Yeah, I would love to sometime, Emily.
In so many ways. There's the literal death topic. There's the deaths that you talked about in the very beginning of relationships or even stages of relationships. And you've also mentioned how your humanness tries to control, which all of ours does. And you've managed to find yourself leaning into more of a flow, being kinder to yourself. I'm also curious how your mom came through to you.
Yeah.
So what I would love to do is close this chapter of our conversation and invite you back for the next chapter to cover these topics. And I'm sure many more things that will come through.
Oh, I'd love to, Emily. And just thank you for your invitation and just getting to share space with you today. Yeah.
Likewise. Thank you for being here and co-creating this and for sharing so beautifully everything it is that you have, your knowledge. Where can people find you? Where can they work with you? What do you have going on right now that someone may be able to experience with you?
Yeah, so they can find me through the link for my website, theheartcenter.us. And there are upcoming online cannabis ceremonies that are held bi-monthly from the comfort of your home. You can also get a sense of my other offerings. You're just taking a look at the site.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Something that I will also want to at some point touch on is the I am a white woman, and you also are a white woman, and you and I actually haven't really touched on this topic, but I've continued to do work around what it means to be a practitioner in this space. And you have that as part of your website, which is why I bring this up. It's such an ongoing journey. It's internal, it's external, it's creating support for people to have conversations around these topics. And so, as a part of other episodes we do together down the road, I'd also like to extend an invitation for us to cover areas of that topic as well.
I'd love to. I'd love to.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being you, for
Oh.
existing, for sharing your Sarah Hart medicine with the world in its many forms. And I just have so much gratitude that our paths have crossed. And I'm so excited for this community to also know that your work exists for them, or maybe someone in their own personal community. They now have another chapter and earmark in their book where if they hear someone who's going through something or has a curiosity, they can now filter through and send your way too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Emily.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, and make sure you've signed up for the newsletter for special insights, offerings, and announcements that are just for you.
This podcast and website represents the opinions of Emily Marie and her guests to the show and website. The content should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical advice, recommendations, and questions. Views and opinions expressed in this podcast and website are our own and do not represent that of our places of work. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors.